This episode is sponsored in part by Address Validator. Incorrect addresses cost U.S. businesses over $20 billion each year. If you're tired of paying for redelivery fees and dealing with frustrated customers, Address Validator can help. It integrates with Shopify to catch and fix address errors before they become costly issues. Every day, Address Validator checks over 300,000 orders and prevents more than 11,000 failed deliveries. Big brands like Sennheiser, Helly Hansen, and Kylie Cosmetics already trust it to save them money and keep customers happy. You can even try Address Validator on your first 100 orders for free with a dashboard showing your savings. Head over to the Shopify App Store and make bad addresses a thing of the past with Address Validator. Last week, we heard from Kurt Bullock, talked about Facebook ads, for sure, Meta ads, Facebook ads, a necessary evil when you are a Shopify brand owner. But one of the favorite traffic acquisition channels that we all love is SEO, right? Because the promise of SEO is free qualified traffic if I can just have the right configuration of online store in terms of, you know, content, backlinks, how my HTML is laid out. Well, a whole variety of factors. And it's also one of those tasks that AI seems particularly adept at optimizing for, you know, it being able to speed along a lot of this, you know, heavier data entry work. And so we haven't talked SEO since I think last year. And so let's do an SEO update. We need an expert. Today we have one, Jeff Oxford, who has been involved in SEO for 15 years now. He's going to walk us through the state of SEO in 2025, you know, some of these AI tools, and he got on the show because he said there's a lot of mistakes people are making. Let's talk through them. And so here he is. Jeff Oxford, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, so happy to be here, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, what's your business? What's your background? Why are you qualified to talk about SEO?
I'll just kind of give you the 1 minute TLDR. I first got in e-commerce in 2011. I was just out of college trying to make some beer money on the side. So I started an e-commerce site, drop shipping beer pong tables. Got that to rank, you know, top three for every keyword. Ended up selling that off to a manufacturer. Wanted to try to find a niche that was more profitable. So then I got into drop shipping 3D printers. That I didn't realize that some industries are more notorious for credit card fraud than others, and 3D printers happen to be one of those industries. So I was 24 at the time. I was so excited because my first month I got like 30,000 in sales. Well, next month I got hit with, it turns out 90% of those were chargebacks.
Oh no.
So it just took me down. And that was a very pivotal moment for me where I'm like, you know what? I enjoy SEO. I enjoy e-commerce marketing. I'm going to stick with that. And I've been doing e-commerce SEO ever since.
All right. So having done this for 15 years, what's changed in how stores get traffic from Google?
Well, I think the biggest one that's probably on everyone's mind is AI. So, you know, it's been pretty, you know, first, if I go way back when, like 2010, it was just 10 blue links. And then it was like 10 blue links plus, you know, people, you know, then you started to get the featured snippets boxes at the top, and people also ask, and it was kind of the search results were evolving, but we're seeing a big evolution right now with the AI overviews. So now, and you might find this interesting, there's a lot of AI overviews, but they only show up really for informational keywords. There's a big study done, 99% of AI overviews are showing up for just informational keywords. So they haven't really stepped on the toes of e-commerce yet. If someone's searching for like gaming laptop or, you know, white t-shirt, those queries are pretty much safe from the AI overviews, but we are starting to see them come in and really take market share and clicks away from, like, you know, blogs and informational posts. You know, typically if an AI overview is showing up, the clicks on that search result go down about 30%.
You know, I just tested your theory. I searched an informational query. I did best time to visit Disney World, and immediately comes back with the AI overview. And scanning it quickly, I more or less agree with it. And then I did gaming laptop. No AI overview. Yeah. Goes straight to like the typical results one might expect.
The one exception is when you look at like middle of the funnel keywords, like where someone's researching a product, maybe it's like best smoker grill or Dell versus Lenovo laptops. Some of those you start to see it a bit more because it's kind of, it's not fully transactional, fully informational, and somewhere in between. Those are the ones that I'd say are kind of in the crosshairs where AI can give a really good user experience. I mean, one of the worst feedback Google's had and kind of the critiques these past few years is everyone was sick of these junky affiliate sites writing articles about, you know, best gaming laptops, best credit card, like, or maybe not so much best credit cards, but like all this best, this,
best, that. Oh, for sure, best credit card is one of them too.
Yeah. And it was just, all they would do is go on Amazon. They'd just, you know, regurgitate some reviews and product information. They would never touch the product. They don't even know anything about it. And this was just flooding Google search results. I'm sure there's probably people listening to this who have seen these, you know, for some of the products that they carry. And, you know, Google's response to that was kind of stomp these sites out, and they had a bunch of updates that just killed blogs. And I think that's one place where AI can really help gather all this data, do really in-depth reviews. So I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see a little more AI presence for them, some of those middle of funnel research type queries.
I think the other question is, that we hear a lot about SEO these days is it still worth it? Because we have AI overviews are starting to take over, and you know, we have tools that replace Google search with AI like Perplexity, and you know, ChatGPT will do research and web searches as well. What's your feeling there?
I would say, well, first off, it depends on the type of website you have. So if you're a content site, if you're like, hey, I want to make a blog, I'm going to create a blog and make all this money from blogging, it's not worth it. It's just all the updates we've seen for like the past 3 years, the core updates, the helpful content updates have just squashed, you know, private publishers. The only people that are winning in that game are the kind of the bigger names. But in the e-commerce space, SEO is still worth it. There's one caveat. There's a few caveats. First off, you have to make sure your products are getting searched a lot in Google. So like if nobody's searching for your product and they don't know about it, your marketing dollars are probably best spent on Facebook ads, where it's more of like demand generation, giving people something they don't know exists in the market yet. If people do know about your product and it's just a better product, then SEO can work well if they're searching for it. So, you know, first off is check to see, are people searching for this? You know, Google has their free keyword planner tool. There's other free keyword tools like Uber Suggest out there that are great, just to, you know, kind of do a spot check to see, hey, if I rank number one, am I even going to get any traffic, or am I going to rank for number one for a keyword no one's searching for? So that's the first one. There's one other caveat that people don't really talk about much, but it's product pricing. So if you search any keyword, you know, if you're looking for a product into Google, you'll notice the top three positions and more so almost pretty much page one is going to be the cheapest option. You're going to see the Amazons, the Targets, the Walmarts, the Best Buys. Like, yes, these are very authoritative sites and that's going to help them. But very rarely will you see kind of luxury premium products ranking at the top. And there's a reason for this. If you look at any market and you kind of have a little pie chart in your mind, you can say, okay, maybe 20% of this is going to be like budget shoppers. They're going to get just the bare minimum no matter what. They're going to Temu. They just want the cheapest product. Most people, you know, maybe 60%, they're value shoppers. They'll pay a little bit more if they can see the incremental value. They don't want just the cheapest junk. They want something that might last for a while. But then at the other end, maybe there's only 20% that are looking for a real premium top market, you know, dog food or whatever it is. And they have the budget for that. So let's say your site is optimized perfectly. You have all these backlinks. You're ranking number three. Well, if only 20% of the market is looking for a higher cost, you know, premium product, that means 80% of the people are probably going to bounce from your page. And engagement metrics like bounce rate, time on site, have a huge impact on ranking. So you could have the most perfectly optimized page, but if people are seeing your price, getting sticker shock and hitting the back button, clicking on someone else, that's a very strong signal that you don't deserve to rank very high. And very quickly, Google's going to lower your site. So I always hesitate to do SEO for premium brands just because you have such a strong headwind that in most cases, it's not worth it.
Okay, so if I sell bags of some type and, you know, backpacks,
yeah,
and the price of backpack could be all over the place. I've got a $300 backpack. This is a nice backpack.
Yeah.
I happen to show up, you know, and through optimization, I'm at the top of the search. People click through. But then because I have, you know, Google Analytics installed on my site, or just because they quick backed to the Google search,
it's more so they click back. Yeah.
Okay. So they know it. And then that works against me because, you know, that is an indication to Google that you were not the relevant answer.
Hey, that's exactly. Those clickbacks will kill you.
All right. And so once that happens, is there any recovering from it?
So like if you're 50% above market, so let's say you search bags and, you know, number one is Amazon. It's going to be a backpack. So you're probably going to see things from $20 to maybe $70. If I had to guess, it's kind of the range you're likely to see. If you're 50% higher, maybe you're like 100 to 120 or 150, you're still kind of in the ballpark. It's when you're like selling $300 backpacks when you're like 3x what Amazon's selling, that's when it's really hard to get those to rank well. Because most people, like, yeah, there's a part of the market that wants that, but most people want, you know, they're like, hey, why would I spend $300 on this when I can get something for $50 on Amazon? And that's why, you know, that bounce rate and that clickback is going to kill you.
All right, if I want to get creative, and this has its own problems, can I have a note that says, I can hide my product price and instead display a note that says, add to cart to see the price?
You could try it, but then you also wonder, like, is that going to hurt bounce rates? Where now people are like, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to add to cart. Let me just click on something that lists it.
And now, yeah, I'm certainly not going to be a Google shopping after that. It's going to kick out my landing page.
And once they see the price, they're probably going to end up going back anyways. You might just be delaying the inevitable.
Darn. Okay. I thought I was really clever.
I like the way you think, Kurt. I'm always up for kind of tricky SEO tactics.
Is our theory here that premium brands struggle in search in general because of pricing?
They in general, they do.
Jeez.
Unless the one exception is someone like for keywords like luxury backpack or like designer backpack, like you'll do fine in those keywords. But if it's just backpack, you know, school backpack, kind of the more general ones, if it doesn't have like a luxury premium modifier, it's going to be really difficult.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. So we have to change. We have to be explicit in our target market based on this keyword. Is that really my only option here?
I'm an SEO first and a marketer second. So like there's going to be some cases where SEO is great, but there's also some cases where, you know, yes, you can try to push this boulder up a hill, but maybe your marketing dollars would be better spent on Facebook ads or another channel. So yeah, I think we just have to accept that SEO is a great solution most of the time, but it's not a great marketing solution all the time.
Okay. Interesting. I want to talk SEO pitfalls. You know, we've learned one already, and you've worked on what, hundreds of Shopify stores or e-com stores at this point?
Yeah, I'd say hundreds by now.
What's the number one mistake? What's the most common mistake?
I'll throw a few at you. So we'll do kind of the beginner ones and we'll get a little more advanced as we go. So the biggest pitfall, one of the biggest mistakes I see is having category pages or collection pages that don't have any content in there. It's just such an easy thing to do to have 150 to 300 words of content talking about your products, your unique selling points, who can benefit from it, you know, just information, like think of like a mini buyer's guide. What questions would people have before purchasing a product? Answer those questions in the copy. Now you don't need to have this big ugly block of content above your products. You know, it could negatively impact the UI and the UX of the page. But maybe you show just two or three lines with a read more button that's going to expand it.
Okay. Yeah, because that was going to be my question is, you know, collection pages, that's always kind of a balancing act. Because I know in split tests, if I do anything that pushes my product grid down the page, that's going to reduce, ultimately that is going to negatively impact my conversion rate. And so, you know, big hero image and a lot of text and I got to scroll down. For the customer, it's just stuff to scroll past. But I see the advantage in, you know, having context, having content that helps, you know, position and frame the products that follow. But you're saying, all right, then our balance, our ideal way to do it, collection title, collection description at the top, but then we hide it behind an accordion menu, you know, show more, read more.
Yeah, you give a snippet and then have like, you know, read more. So there's going to be people that don't care. They're just going to scroll past it. But there might be people that are just on the cusp and on the fence of if they're going to buy it or not. And maybe that description is what won them over. So I say that because most for e-commerce sites, most of the SEO wins happen at the category page. You know, products are good, but the search volume at a product level is usually a lot lower. It's typically a category page where you see the most search volume that still has good conversion intent. And it's such an easy thing to write it. And especially with AI, there's no excuses now to get some good content. So have some helpful content. Another pitfall I see is people focus too much on word count. In the past, there's been some correlation studies that show higher word count leads to higher rankings. And as a result, people would just stuff fluffy content on their collection pages. That can actually work against you. It's not so much that having 1,000 words ranks better than 500 words, but if you have 1,000 words, chances are you have more bits of information and data that Google can pull. You know, Google actually has something called information gain score. They're looking to see how much information can they gain from your content. And if it's just fluff and, you know, hyperbole and all this kind of empty, you know, salesy copy, there's no value to the user. It's probably not going to rank as well. So focus more on quality versus quantity and have like a really helpful 250 word category description and basically embedding a blog post.
Here's some customer service emails you don't want to wake up to. I was drunk. This was a gift, but we broke up. Wrong color, wrong size, wrong me. Sound familiar? With Cleverific, you don't have to deal with these anymore. Cleverific gives your customers a self-service portal to edit their own orders. No emails, no back and forth, just simple fixes. Fewer support tickets, faster fulfillment, and happier customers. Peter Manning New York slashed their order support request by 99%. You can too. Get 50% off the Cleverific Pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for the unofficial Shopify podcast listeners. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Fix the problem before it's a problem. That's Cleverific. This information gain score is interesting. It's essentially like a measure of how novel or original your content is. Like, what's the value add versus what's out there? So if it's generic, you really don't get the advantage, do you?
It's more so like Google's going to go into your content. It's going to see like what bits of information, like, okay, you say what unique selling points are. You say the different materials of this. You say who can benefit from it. It's like, okay, like different things that they can add to their knowledge graph. And the more little kind of tangible data points they're collecting, it's more of a score of conciseness. If you have 1,000 words, but there's really no information to be gained, it's going to be very fluffy. And they actually have another patent called gibberish score, which is just like how much kind of junk and fluff is in the content. So, you know, word count is a myth. Please don't stuff your pages full of, you know, padded full of words just to hit a word count. Focus more on having helpful, valuable content. Ask yourself, what would my customer want to know when landing on this page, and approach from that lens.
You're talking about collection pages. One of the common questions I hear is, well, hey, is it better to have fewer product listings with more options or more listings with fewer options? What's the, you know, from UX UI standpoint, that's one discussion. From SEO, I think it's another discussion.
You pretty much nail it's a balancing act, because I always like to start with the UI UX side of it, because if you have a low engaging collection page, because I've been sitting in the back button, it doesn't matter how good your SEO is. Now, on the SEO side, there are some benefits of having a leaner, smaller catalog than this massive catalog with all these pages. You have things like crawl budget, where, you know, maybe Google's not going to be able to access all your product pages if you have a separate product page for every SKU. Maybe if you have, let's say you sell t-shirts, you got sizes, you got colors. You know, if you take one product, that could be 20 different SKUs. You know, do you really want to have 20 indexable URLs for every single product? That in cases like that, it might be a bit excessive. But on the other side, like, maybe you want to have something visual where people can see all the colors, and that's going to, you know, if that will rate, connect with them more, and that's going to have higher conversion rate and better engagement metrics. So what I would say is, for cases like that, focus on what's going to provide the most value to the user, because I think that would outweigh any downsides of having an inflated catalog.
How big does a site have to get, you know, how many pages before we start running into crawl budget issues?
So it's kind of a balancing act. It comes down to how authoritative your site is and how many backlinks you have. If you're a brand new website and you have a low authority, you have tools like Moz and Ahrefs and SEMrush will kind of give you like an authority score or domain rating. If you're below 20, Google's not going to crawl your site as often. If you have a very authoritative site, you're getting mentioned in the press, you got all these backlinks, you could have hundreds of thousands, millions of pages, and Google should be able to get all of them. So it all depends on how authoritative your site is. So if you have like a massive catalog of 500,000 products, but you're only a domain rating of like 20, you're probably not getting all your products crawled and indexed.
So what if I have a big catalog, and I don't have a choice? It's like, this is the catalog is what it is as far as size goes. What are my options to mitigate it or optimize?
You can do the best you can with internal linking. So have your parent categories, have your subcategories, have your sub-subcategories, have different navigational paths. So maybe you have an option for people to shop by color, or maybe you have people shop by brand, maybe you have people shop by material. Do some keyword research to see how people are searching for your products and then have those collections there. So just having different navigational paths can help kind of more internal links to your products. On your product pages, you can have related products to get more cross-linking throughout the website. So there's some tricks like that you can do to help improve the crawling of your website. But at the end of the day, if you still have like a really high, if you really have a really big product count, you just have to accept that maybe Google can't get to everything. And I'll kind of give one little anecdote here. I had a client who had the same thing. They sold kind of just your typical medical over-the-counter products, Band-Aids, creams, pain relievers, pretty much anything you can buy from CVS, they carried. But there's really only four product lines that they white label that had the best margins that they really cared about. And that was COVID test kits, masks, gloves, and incontinence products. So, and I don't recommend doing this if you're listening, but what we did in this case is we no-indexed 90% of the website. We literally took it out of the search engine except for those core four products. It was interesting as we saw in Google's index, the number of index pages plummeted, but traffic tripled from that one change for these ones. So it goes to show that sometimes less is more and consolidation can have a big impact on SEO. But of course, there has to be a business case to make those types of changes as well.
So you had a site with a big catalog. Let's just say it is a dropshipping site. It's got a million products. And when you have a site like that, they span a wide variety of categories. And so what you did here was knowing that they had out of that maybe 20% or less, so four categories, were what we wanted to optimize for. You did some SEO-wise is fairly extreme. You used
very extreme.
A no-index tag. Which is it's a note that tells Google you're not allowed to include this anymore.
Yes.
They are allowed, and if it finds the page, it's allowed to follow and find other pages from it. But that page is now exempt. It's excluded. And so don't Correct. Do this lightly, because you just banned yourself from Google if you do it wrong. And by doing that, though, Google then said, truly ignored the pages you told it to and said, now we understand what this site is about. And essentially, you optimized for those four categories. So you're able, I assume, get better visibility, better search results.
That's exactly. There's two benefits there. One is just having a smaller catalog alone has some benefits because, now you can ensure Google's crawling all your products, indexing all your products. Now all the link juice throughout the website is consolidated to a much smaller number of pages, so it's not diluted as much. So you have benefits of just having a smaller catalog, but there's also something, and we found this out during Google's big ranking factor leak last year. There's something called site focus score, which it looks at how focused is this site on one particular topic. So if you have a site that's covering all these different products and all these different product lines, your site focus score for any product line is going to be very small. But if you consolidate to just a few, now your site focus score increases. So for example, a site that sells, what's the latest iPhone, like 16 now? A site that just sells iPhone 16 phone cases, all things considered equal, will outrank a site that just sells all phone cases. A site that sells all phone cases will outrank a site that just sells iPhone accessories. So the more specific, hyper-focused your site gets, the better you rank. And you might have seen the search results, like why is this low, you know, this no authority, low authority competitor that I've never heard of outranking me? Chances are it might be because they're just more hyper-focused. Like they're just so niched down that that's helping them outrank you in search results.
So should I be, if I want to get really aggressive, should I be no indexing low performing content?
I wouldn't go that far. I would not do it just from an SEO perspective.
Okay.
But I had to guess from looking at, you know, hundreds of analytics accounts for e-commerce sites over the years, the 80-20 rule almost always applies. 80% of your traffic and revenues usually coming from about 20% of the products and categories. So if there's a business case where it's like, hey, maybe we don't need all these kind of more niche accessory products, like we added them because we wanted to like have upsells and cross sells, but it's really not working out. If that's the case, it could be worth cutting it. I wouldn't do it for the sake of SEO. Yes, there's SEO benefits, but I'd focus more on like, is there an actual business case for it? Otherwise, you can kind of shoot yourself in the foot just cutting things for SEO.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't attempt it. You know, I'm pretty comfortable with SEO. That's as soon as it's like, hey, let's start no indexing things.
Yeah, please don't do this without consulting an expert. I don't want any emails in my inbox like, hey, you said to cut all these pages and I did it. And now my traffic plummeted. So yeah, it's a very extreme thing that you want to do a lot of analysis and prep work ahead of time first.
I want to know, what do you think is the most overrated tactic in SEO?
I think people talk about just on page in general and technical SEO, I think it's a little excessive, and I think people make it out to be the end all be all. Truth be told, when it comes to and again technical SEO, that's going to be things like canonical tags, XML sitemaps, robot.txt, you know, duplicate URLs. You know, can Google crawl the JavaScript? Like, it's all the technical stuff about can Google crawl, index, and rank your website. When I first got into SEO, it was really important. You know, you had side platforms like Volution and Yahoo Stores that were terrible, and you had to like address these issues. But with modern platforms like Magento 2, Shopify, WooCommerce, BigCommerce, out of the box, they're pretty SEO friendly. Sure, maybe there's a few little tweaks and optimizations you can do here, but there's nothing detrimental that's going to be holding you back. So I'd say, yes, there's some value to technical SEO. Definitely more so if you have a large catalog with, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of pages. For most people, you know, it shouldn't be more than, again, if it's more than a 1 week or 1 month project, it's probably too much for most sites. It's typically get it right the first time, then move on to stuff that really moves the needle. And within that umbrella of technical SEO, I'd say, yes, structured data and, you know, schema, it's beneficial, but it's not going to make a real difference in your rankings. Site speed, yes, it's great if you have a slow site and you get it average, but don't worry about hitting all the core web vital metrics with page speed insights. Don't worry about that optimization score. We have to accept as e-commerce companies that, you know, we need a lot of functionality that a content site doesn't need. We have live chat, Klaviyo integrations, Pixel, split tag. Like, there's a lot of things that's going to impact site scores. So people get hung up on it too much. And what I think it is it's easy to tinker around with stuff you can control on your website. It's much harder to do link building and do the things that are actually going to move the needle and get you to rank a lot better.
So these are things that, you know, today our platform, you know, Shopify, yeah. And if we've got a good online store 2.0 theme from the Shopify theme store, it's already been vetted and set up to handle all these things for us. You know, like,
yeah,
structured data, schema, rich structured data. That's just a code snippet provided by Shopify now. And Shopify generates the sitemap and it generates mm-hmm. robots.txt. And you know, it does all these things for me.
It handles canonical tags. It does a good job with a lot of that stuff.
Just by virtue of you have a Shopify store and a theme from the theme store, the stuff's already handled. You know,
yeah.
You don't have
Again,
to worry
it's 95% of the way there. Maybe there's a few little tweaks to get it, you know, the extra 5%, but it's such diminishing returns at that point that it's not worth getting hung up on. Like, too many people think like my site has to be perfect, I have to do this. It's like, okay, if your rankings are struggling and your traffic's declining, it's like polishing the lifeboats on the Titanic before it's hitting the iceberg. Like, you really gotta look at the bigger picture of what's holding you back.
Rearrange those deck chairs.
Earlier
you mentioned internal linking. That is something technical and on-site I could control. What's the strategy? What's the thought process behind on-site internal linking?
So I'll just give a few simple tips here. If you have a blog and you have some blog posts, on your blog content, link to relevant category pages and product where it makes sense. Context is key. Don't just start spamming your blog post to try to link to everything. But like if you have a blog, if I have a blog talking about video games, maybe, and I sell gaming laptops, I probably want to link to my gaming laptops page from that. You know, there's a connection, there's relevance, and there's context. If you have some products that are really important to your business, link to those from the homepage. Your homepage is your most powerful page. Whatever you link to from your homepage is instantly going to get an SEO boost. So if you have a product that's like ranked between position 10 and 15 and you link to it from your homepage, in many cases, that's enough to put it in like the top five positions. So that's a simple little boost you can do and use it as you want.
I like that.
Another thing is on your products, I always recommend having breadcrumbs where, you know, it links to like the, so, you know, it'll be like homepage, category page, product, and you have the breadcrumbs. And yeah, sure, there might be some UI UX benefits to it, but having all your products linked to the parent category is now giving all these internal links to those category pages. That's going to help them rank better. And if you do have a large catalog to where you have category pages and subcategory pages, make sure that your top level category pages have links to your subcategory pages just to kind of get the flow of link juice. So if you do those four things, your site is pretty much in tip top shape when it comes to internal linking.
Hey, still struggling to increase AOV? You've built a great store, but your upsells and cross-sells, they're underperforming. That's because outdated apps rely on guesswork, and that costs you real money. Enter Zipify One-Click Upsell. Their AI-powered tech finds the highest converting upsell for every customer. No complicated setup needed. Over 10,000 Shopify stores trust OCU, and it's already generated nearly $1 billion in extra revenue. So if your upsells still run like they did 5 years ago, it's time to upgrade. Get Zipify One-Click Upsell free for 30 days at zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT. Don't leave money on the table. Try AI-powered upsells today. So the internal linking really is a way to indicate to Google, this is what is important on this site. This is what we prioritize.
Hey, that's exactly it.
Okay. And I love the breadcrumb tip because that's something we do on the product page. From a UI UX standpoint, I want to be able to give people an easy way to go back to the collection. But then I get an SEO benefit out of it as well. So just, you know, easy bonus.
And I guess a fifth tip would be if you do have a large catalog on product pages, add links to related products. That can just really help get the crawlers deeper into your website.
I want to talk to you about AI tools and SEO and workflow. By chance, are you a vibe coder?
I consider myself a vibe coder. I dabble.
I've got, you know, ChatGPT and I are great friends, and I've written some Python scripts with it. It evolved over time into vibe coding with ChatGPT, and it has helped me with SEO. I've had it plug into the Shopify API, and It's able to write alt text for product media. Where like previously, It would have been, you know, prohibitively difficult to do that correctly or well, just, you know, based on the size of a catalog and the number of photos involved. Or, you know, I have it write SEO title and meta description on products. And or using fuzzy logic to match up and create URL redirects. So there's a lot of great SEO benefit that I could largely automate with AI tools. Am I shooting myself in the foot? You know, I don't think so. But what are your thoughts here?
I think when it comes to metadata, like, okay, so there's a few use cases for AI. One you mentioned is image alt text. I think that's a safe bet. It's good because most images, people aren't taking the time to write alt text to begin with. So having at least something descriptive is going to be better than nothing. So that's great. GPT-4o's vision capabilities is really good at understanding images and writing good alt text. So highly recommend that. Great job, Kurt. There's a few other cases where AI can help with SEO. So if we go to the kind of the fundamentals of SEO, you have title tags, meta descriptions, and header tags. It can help with title tags, but it's, you know, one of those things like the quality of the output is dependent on the quality of your inputs. So if you just say, write me a title tag for my gaming laptops page, you know, it'll probably have gaming laptops in there, but you're not giving it as much information as it needs. What's going to be much better is, you know, check out your rankings. You can either take a screenshot of your rankings or just like copy it and paste it in. Like, write a title tag for my gaming laptop's page. Here's the current rank data with the search volume and current position. And then it will actually write a title tag based on what you're ranking for. So it might incorporate long tail keywords. So it's going to rank better for that. It might, it's usually good at coming up with like high click through rate title tags. It might say like, you know, free shipping or, you know, as low as whatever. But giving it more ranking data is going to get a much higher quality output. And it will also include that in your meta description. But if you want to go a step further, and this is what we've been doing, is you take a screenshot of the page. You use ChatGPT with the 4.0, GPT-4.0 model. You give it a screenshot of the page so it knows what it's optimizing for. You give it the ranking data. And now it has everything to basically make an informed decision like an SEO specialist would. It knows the search intent of the page. It knows kind of what the unique selling points are from the page. It knows what products are on the page. So when it's talking about the meta description, it's not talking about products you don't carry. It's only talking about what you actually have. And it's making sure to use the correct keywords. So the more information you can feed ChatGPT, the much better quality output you're going to get back.
So the phrase, one of the phrases I live my life by is garbage in, garbage out. You can apply this to all kinds of things. And with AI, for sure, garbage in, garbage out applies. And so, you know, my process was I have to bulk update hundreds or thousands of products. And so I tell it, like, here are my SEO best practices. That's in the prompt. Here is, like, here's the format to use. Here's character counts to shoot for. You know, here's the context of who your client is. And then here is product title and description. Now try and generate SEO title and meta description. And if I'm doing that, you know, replacing SEO title and meta description in bulk on hundreds of products, I'm probably like net better than I was. But then I really want to go through and pick those, like, you know, those top 20% of products and then go with this more extended approach for the stuff that I want to rank for, or I think I can rank for. And, you know, maybe set up like a custom GPT that's got all those settings in it. And then I love the idea of give it the page. I've been doing this with, it was a Chrome extension called Full Page Screenshot. And it'll just give me a ping that's like, this is the entire page. And I can just drag and drop that to ChatGPT. And you're right, its vision is so good. It'll understand it. You know, you could say, like, tell me about this, analyze it, you know, to verify it. But once it's got that context, you know, suddenly you get a much better output with it. Okay.
Yeah. And just real quick, here's like the levels of page optimization. Level one, write me, you know, one prompt, write me a title tag for gaming laptops. Level two, write me a title tag for gaming laptops. By the way, here's the ranking data. Level three, write me a title tag, but here's the ranking data and a screenshot of the page. Level four is the scale part. You can use no code tools like Replit or Bolt. Like, I'm not a developer. I don't know how to code, but I know how to speak English. So I've been using Replit, and there's so many APIs out there. Like, within 30 minutes, I was able to have it use the screenshot one API to take a screenshot of the page and then pass that screenshot to ChatGPT to analyze and also, you know, pull in Ahrefs data. So within 30 minutes, I was able to just no code a tool that can optimize hundreds of URLs at once. So that's like, I guess it's the highest level. Once you get into vibe coding, you can really start scaling some of these processes.
I will now share the cautionary tales about vibe coding and these AI SEO tools. My first versions of these scripts were limited to 250 products. They didn't paginate. They just, like, if it went over 250, that was it. You know, it couldn't do it. And, you know, so then I was able to work through that, no problem. But, you know, initially, like, it's not going to volunteer that information to you. You have to know it and then, you know, revise your prompt, you revise your code. And then the other issue I ran into is I had one version of this alt text script where it was not successfully getting the image. And it was getting the URL and then the context, but it didn't error out. It would hallucinate the alt text. Right. And so I did not initially figure it out, but then, like, I go back through and spot check it. And after a few, I'm like, this doesn't seem quite right. Like, not quite what it was. That's odd. And then I figured it out, but definitely, you know, those tools can fail in spectacularly great fashion. So just, you know, double check your work.
ChatGPT especially, I've used a lot, all the major models, and ChatGPT hallucinates more than I'd like. My go-to now is Cloud, however you want to pronounce
Claude?
It.
C-L-A. I would say Claude.
Yeah, one of those. C-L-A-U-D-E. by Anthropic. That's my go-to. I probably spend most of my work in there just because it almost never hallucinates. Like, it's really good about, if it doesn't know, it tells you rather than just making stuff up.
Yeah, I've played with it a little bit and I was impressed with it, especially for creative writing. It's very good.
So that was one thing I want to mention is, like, you know, another big part of the AI process is content writing. Maybe you want to have a category description for your category pages. Maybe you want to have a blog post. Cloud is still probably the best at writing content and writing well. But what can really make it go above and beyond is it has this projects feature. We create a project and you can just dump in everything about your brand. It could be like, you know, copy from your about page. It could be any data you have about personas and target audience. It could be, you know, literally just copy and paste your top product descriptions and put it in there. Give it all this context about your brand, your writing style. Even give it like some writing samples that you're really proud of. Maybe you personally wrote a few blog posts. Put that in there so it gets the context of what it should shoot for. And you create this project with all these documents. Now when you write content, it's going to be in line with your brand. It's going to mention products that you actually have. It's going to write for your target audience. And the output is going to be so much better than if you just did a prompt without any additional context.
I like that. And again, yeah, garbage in, garbage out. Like the more context you can give it, generally it's going to perform better.
If you're lazy like me, you can just use ChatGPT, use their deep research function to say, create me a brand brief, a brand overview for whatever your brand is. Let it scrape everything from Google itself, build you a brand brief, and then just paste that directly into Cloud and you're good to go.
It is fun when you're like, you end up using two of them. You know, you're using like Anthropic's Claude and then ChatGPT. Like, I'll do that. You know, Claude is better at describing images. So I'll give it an image where I'm like, hey, you know, describe this in great, great technical detail. And then when it does it, I'll say, oh, man, that's 5 of 10. I want 10 of 10 detail. And then it really describes it. And then I could go to ChatGPT and take that. And then now I have, you know, I could use that to generate images with it, you know, where I can really nail like brand style or recreate an image pretty exactly with AI and then remix it. You know, just like you start to learn which tools are fine-tuned toward certain outcomes. I want to talk about diagnosing SEO problems. And we recently had a client who's like, "Yeah, we think our Google organic search is dropping off, but you know, we're not sure what's going on. You know, research it and tell us like, A, is this actually happening? You know, is this seasonal? Is this consumer confidence? Like, what the heck is it? What's happening?" So how would you go about it?
First thing is, I always start with seasonality. So like, you know, look at your year over year data, what was traffic looking like same time last year? Is it just a seasonal trend or is this out of the blue and things are just going down? So let's rule out seasonality. Next, I'm going to look at known Google updates, and you can get this from Ahrefs or SEMrush, or if you just search for like known Google updates, you'll get a whole list of kind of the major updates in Google. Does this correlate with an algorithm update? Most of the time it does. I'd say that right there kind of explains most of the drops I see, especially Google's rolling out a core algorithm update every 3 to 6 months. There's a lot of fluctuations during those.
So, like, how do I know that? Where do you get that news?
So like if you just go into Google and type in like Google known algorithm updates, there's going to be like already number one is Search Engine Journal has their list every single major update they've had with dates, description about it, links to Google's announcement. So that's probably the best place to start. And that will just show you like, okay, wow, my traffic. And you look at the inflection point, like if you have a downward trend, look at when did it start going downward. Typically it'll be like flat and you'll see like one inflection point. You want to look at what's the date of the inflection point. So that's where I check to see, does that inflection point line up with any updates? And using tools like SEMrush or Ahrefs can also be helpful because it'll show you like how many keywords you're ranking for over time. And the inflection point's a little more prominent when it's looking at keyword ranking instead of estimated traffic. So you can use those tools to kind of gauge where you hit by an update. So in most cases, you're hit by an update. And cases like that, like, okay, anecdotally, the sites that I see get hit by updates are typically ones that have like bloated catalogs, low performing pages. Maybe they have technical issues that's generating lots of duplicate product URLs with like the same content. Maybe you have a lot of mediocre blog posts. So I've seen, this is anecdotally, but the sites that can like clean things up, tighten things up, take the quality over quantity approach typically do better with those updates. If you were happen to get hit, that's an approach. But let's say there's still no Google update during that time. Look at technical issues. Did your developer make any changes? Did you add a new app in Shopify to handle the merchandising for collection pages or your internal search? Like, try to correlate. A lot of times it will be a technical SEO issue. So those are kind of like the few main cases where I see traffic falling off.
If I've ruled out seasonality, core update, and technical issue, what then? Like, then I assume it's a content issue?
If that, in some cases, like I'd say maybe 5% of the time, it just doesn't line up with anything. And just like, well, you know, either way it's down, let's just still add the best practices. Okay, there's one more. You can look at the search results. Maybe Google started, maybe for your keyword, there's now an AI overview. Maybe for your keyword, Google's completely overhauled. Maybe they got more aggressive with paid ads. I know there's a giant block of paid ads above you. Maybe people also ask box push you down. So the SERP can also change and push you down. But even if that's the case, like eventually you go through the checklist and it's like, hey, we've checked everything, nothing lines up. You know, sometimes you just have to accept that you might not know the exact answer, but the SEO best practices still apply. Make sure there's no technical SEO issues. Make sure your page is optimized and make sure you have enough backlinks to compete with the competition.
Okay. I mean, all good advice, seems all sane. And, you know, really, when we're talking about this diagnosis work, it's going to be in like Google Analytics and Google Search Console, right?
Yeah. I would say Google Analytics for sure. But the problem with Google Analytics, it doesn't segment branded versus non-branded traffic. For that, you have to use Google Search Console. So, you know, you're always going to rank for your brand. It's really the non-brand traffic you care about. So go to Google Search Console, filter out your branded keywords, and then you can look at what's the actual trend look like. And you can also segment to see which parts of your website got impacted. Was it everything, or was it just your blog got impacted? Was it just your collection pages? Was it just your product pages? Once you start kind of splicing and dicing, it paints a better picture of what might have actually happened.
Okay. All right. Let's come to the end of our time together. Let's do some quick wins here. Give me, where would you start? If you've got a store, you know, they're at the start of their journey, but it's validated. They're doing low six figures annually. But we got to optimize for time and resources. So what's the 80-20 rule? Where are you going to spend your SEO efforts here?
80-20 would be use a keyword research tool like Ahrefs or SEMrush to see what are people actually searching for. Make sure I have those. And I'll give an example. Like if I sell t-shirts, I don't just want a t-shirts page. I want a blue t-shirts, black t-shirts, or maybe also by brand, Hanes t-shirts, Fruit of the Loom t-shirts, or maybe go even more long-tailing and start combining the brand name and the color. So like Fruit of the Loom black t-shirts, you know, Hanes green t-shirts. Find what people are searching for any keywords that has high search volume. Make sure you have a page that can capture that. That's where a lot of these kind of bigger players are sleeping on, is like the really long tail keywords. So the 80-20 is find what the keywords that are more specific, more detailed. Make sure you have a collection page in place for those keywords. You know, use AI to create a really good 250 to 300 word description. Put it on the page. That's right there is going to be your 80-20.
Okay. And then pick a favorite single SEO win that you think our listeners, Shopify merchants, have overlooked.
We already talked about categories, content on category pages. We've already talked about internal linking. Those are the easiest wins. I'm trying to think, is there anything else? If you're a manufacturer, or if you're reselling from your manufacturer, a lot of times they'll have like a buy our products here page where it lists like all their distributors or resellers. Go to your manufacturers, try to get listed on those pages. It's an easy way to get backlinks.
That's a good one. That's a smart backlink strategy. And
yeah,
you're a wealth of SEO info. Where could people go to learn more about you?
Sure. Yeah. Our website is 180marketing.com. My email is just jeff@180marketing.com. So I love helping people. If you have questions or just want to reach out and say hi, totally fine. Shoot me an email.
Jeff Oxford, 180 Marketing, thank you so much.
Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.